A monster. Gabriel Mendoza thinks he's a monster? If he is, we're all fucking Satan himself.
Kale's voice was creeping into the darkness that made me split in two. Half of me was terrified that this was going to swallow him whole. He needed me to pull him out of this quicksand, but how could I, when I didn't know who or what to believe? I knew both of them were pulling at me, using me as a pawn to hurt the other, even if it wasn't premeditated on Kale's part. And I honestly couldn't imagine it being true. I couldn't completely dismiss it either. There were still lies, lots of lies.
Karina, honey, you know right from wrong. You may not think I've been the best father to you and your brother, but you know that I would do anything for you, and for the soldiers under my command. I've dedicated my life to serving this country. I meant no harm when I tried to help them. Tell him that, Karina, if he doesn't want a dishonorable discharge.
My dad held his hands up like he was praying. I had only seen him do that once before when my mom was packing her bags, the first time. He followed her around the living room, telling her all the reasons their life was fine. Not good, but fine. You'll be fine, he told her. Everything will be fine. Between his begging hands and the almost believable devastation in his eyes now as he looked at me, I could see a flicker of what my mom saw in him all those years ago.
Come on, Karina. You don't want that for him. It will ruin his future.
Kale was slipping away from my little living room. He was leaning against the drywall that he had patched up after I tried to hang up a clock and ripped half the wall down. My house, like my personal life, was becoming too much for me to repair.
He can't look at his kid's face without seeing their faces. You know that? It's eating him up. He's not right in the head over it. None of us are.
Kale had torn me open, devoured my body and mind in such a short time. I would have done anything to heal his pain any other time since I met him. But not then, when everything was foggy.
We're all like that. We all have demons that keep us up at night. He can go in for PTSD if he needs to. But you have to stop poking a sleeping dragon. That's the last warning. You're putting us all in danger. Even her.
He pointed at me, using me to chip away at Kale. If my dad thought Kale was deceiving me, why would he think he cared that he was putting me in danger? My dad was a liar. The good kind. Not good for anyone but himself, but still the very, very good kind. My mom told tales about the man she met her senior year of high school, and how he wooed her when she served him a stack of pancakes every Tuesday. That's where the Fisher family tradition stemmed from. The man she fell in love with had soft eyes and a thoughtful heart. Supposedly, he even called her Sunshine, like she used to call me. That man had slowly disappeared, dissolving into a manipulative piece of havoc that I had stumbled into.
Think about it, Martin. Don't jeopardize your future. I'll make sure that medical discharge goes smoothly, as long as you can promise me the same about my retirement.
There he was, scheming in front of me, asking Kale to ignore the pain of his friend and make a selfish choice to appease my father. You're disgusting, I told my dad, before Kale could agree or disagree to his deal.
Stay out of this,
he brushed me off. There he was, diminishing my intelligence, my strength to make my own choices. He was feeding off of my insecurities. Was Kale too? I looked at Kale, then my dad.
Both of you, get out!
My voice was shaky in its delivery, but the words made it to their ears.
Martin, don't be a fool and get yourself tied up in something you can't handle. There will be no more lifelines after this,
my dad continued, despite my very blatant request.
Get out of my house,
I said louder this time. Kale begged with his eyes and my dad with his voice.
Get out now,
I said, as Ailidi stepped into the house. She took in the scene in front of her.
Should I?
She began to ask.
No, you stay. They were just leaving,
I told her. My dad was the first to give, to not break character in front of Ailidi, I was sure. I didn't care what it was, only that he walked out of my living room and the door shut behind him. Kale was harder. He was shaking. I could see his shoulders shaking under his ACUs, and it took every last drop of ability within me to repeat it to him.
Get out of my house, I said,
with as much conviction as a broken voice and heart could manage.
Karina, please listen to me.
I held up my hand.
If you want me to ever speak to you again, get out of my house and let me breathe.
I refused to raise my eyes to him. I knew better. I only had a few breaths left in me until I would collapse in his arms, healing us both. I could see the pain burning bright in his eyes as he turned and finally walked out of the door. Chapter 61. When I woke up the next morning, my head was throbbing. My body ached, my heart was broken. It all came flooding back to me. Kale, my dad, their history. My dad's accusation that Kale was using me as a pawn in some revenge plot for what happened in Afghanistan. What they did there, what Kale had to go through, what Kale had covered up. Part of me thought my dad was completely delusional, obsessively creating this entire thing in his head. It was just a coincidence that Kale and my dad had ever known each other. A coincidence, like bumping into an old friend at the movies, or thinking about someone you haven't heard from in a while, and then seeing their name pop up next to a text. The fact that my dad and Kale were in the same company was like that. A very extraordinary circumstance. But that they had actual contact while overseas at the same time. And the way Ailidi's husband just happened to be Kale's close friend, that was pushing it even for someone who wanted to believe. The pain of it made me want to torment myself, just to distract from the agony I was already feeling. This was exactly what I had been avoiding with Kale. I knew that sooner or later, he would reveal himself to be exactly what he was, what we all are, the most selfish of creatures. I shouldn't have ignored that little voice inside that told me we were headed for nowhere fast and running out of gas. I felt it. The way he withdrew from me the moment we were close. It was fucked up the way he cracked me open, turned me into a freaking Blossom family maple tree, my deepest private thoughts pouring out of me and into him. He soaked them up, but kept the tap closed when it came to himself. I got a line here or there, a little image of his former self lying in my bed in the middle of the night, wrapped in each other. Everything was different now, even if I did believe that our relationship wasn't premeditated. He promised me over and over that he wanted to try this, whatever it was. Was, I reminded myself. While I got dressed, I tried to think about something, anything other than Kale, other than his brilliant, deep mind. I could spend days inside, picking around his light. He was everything a man was supposed to be, the first one I had ever loved, and he turned out to be just another factory model. Even so, my body clung to the hot flash that he was in my life. And then I thought about my own advice to Sammy after she and Austin broke up again, that he was only a teeny tiny part of her life, that in a year he wouldn't matter. In 5 years, he'd barely exist in her memory. She said she'd never forget him, because she'd always be around me, and that where I was, Austin wasn't far behind. But things change. Obviously. I walked around my room, and with each step, I felt my body ache from last night. Every ounce of pain was felt through my entire body. Even so, my body didn't get the memo that we hated Kale now. I wanted his touch. I needed to feel him, skin against skin. I couldn't get him out of my mind. He had gotten so comfortable there. My fingers ached for him as I dug through my drawers for something thin and comfortable. I canceled work for the day, ignoring the questions in Molly's voice. I hung up before I started to cry. I focused on getting dressed. Of course, today would have been a short day at work, and of course, Kale and I had plans to drive as far away from this town as we could. We were preparing questions for each other, gathering music. Just the night before, Kale was making plans to thread our lives together. Or so I thought. Maybe he was just making plans to avenge whatever the fuck happened during that deployment. How had everything shattered so quickly? I thought that if I cleaned myself up, if I had a shower and brushed my teeth, I might feel a little more like myself. A little less than a zombie, anyway. But when I got to the bathroom and saw his tube of cinnamon toothpaste rolled up at the end, I nearly choked. I hated the way this felt. This was bad. This was almost worse than the good had been. I wasn't sure if any of it was worth it. I never wanted to feel this again. Right then and there, I decided that I wasn't ever going to allow myself to step inside this danger zone. I grabbed his gross toothpaste and tossed it into the trash can. When I missed, it cracked against the drywall, and a black line spread across at least 5 inches. I was starting to despise this house, and it knew. That's why it was falling apart right along with me. Chapter 62. The shower had helped a little, but I still looked like hell. I threw on black leggings and a t-shirt and towel-dried my hair and sprayed a little salt spray throughout. It was a lifesaver on my thick hair, I wanted the day to go fast, that's all I wanted. I pinched my cheeks to bring a little color to the surface. I heard Ailidi's voice as soon as I stepped into the hallway. It sounded like she was hushing someone, but she was alone with her laptop. Philip's voice was coming through the speaker.
Don't lie to me,
he said. I thought I heard him wrong, but he said it again.
Don't lie to me, Ailidi. Cooper's wife told me that you were over there. His wife tells him everything, unlike mine.
Ailidi was crying. I had to hold onto the door jamb in the hallway to stop myself from getting into her business. I didn't know what Philip was talking about, but I knew I didn't like the sound of his voice. I had never seen that side of him, or heard it. I couldn't tell if his wife was used to it or not.
I'm not lying. We stopped there for an hour at most. We went to the meetings, then to that house. There weren't any men there,
she told him. I tapped my fingers against the wall to let Ailidi know I was coming. She perked up and wiped at her tears as I knew she would.
Philip, Karina is here,
she said, to warn him, I guess. I didn't know what was going on between them, but I knew I didn't like the way he was speaking to my friend, who was swollen with his child.
Hey, Karina,
Philip said, his voice nice and friendly, opposite of what it just was. I threw him a bland hey and walked into the kitchen. Dishes were piling up in the sink. The laundry in the corner of the kitchen was overflowing in the basket. I couldn't even blame the mess on my emotional despair, because the breakup had happened barely 12 hours ago. I managed to take one bite of an orange before he surrounded me again, the taste of his lips on mine the first time he kissed me. I felt the warmth of him, tasted the sweet citrus that clung to him the first time he kissed me, and I tossed the orange in the trash can. This was getting to be a habit, tossing things into the trash can. Ailidi signed off Skype and met me in the kitchen. Her eyes were bloodshot. The tip of her nose was red as fire. Everything okay? I asked, licking the last of the orange juice off of my lips. She nodded and sat down across from me at the kitchen table. I didn't want to press her, but she was obviously not okay. Ailidi, you know you can talk to me.
You have enough problems.
She tried to smile, to be strong. Ailidi, we can talk about anything. I have time for you. She shook her head.
No, no. I'm fine. Really. It's just drama from the other soldiers. Why is there so much drama? They don't have anything better to do?
She asked me, sniffling and rubbing her nose.
How are you?
She asked, reaching for me. I pretended not to notice as I lowered my hands onto my lap. I'm fine. Just tired, I lied. If she could lie to my face, I could do the same. Chapter 63. I spent my day reading. Ailidi was working and going straight from there to one of the other wives' houses. Instead of worrying about her, I tried to do the things I liked to do before I met Kale. It wasn't so long ago. That meant reading an entire poetry book, the new hipster style of poems with black covers and catchy titles. I'm a sucker for good marketing, so I ordered 3 more from Amazon. Every time I ordered something online, I felt like I was receiving some sort of adult points for having enough money in my checking account to be able to afford it. After I scanned Amazon for too long and talked myself out of buying a pressure washer that I would most definitely never use, the one I was eyeing was called the Clean Machine. I got on Facebook. A quick scroll would clear my head. I mean, it was so much easier to focus on everyone else's problems than my own. I felt better, shamefully so, when I saw that Melanie Pearson was getting divorced. Melanie was in the grade above me and slept with Austin her senior year. She pretended to like me, no doubt to get closer to my brother. Until one day we were swimming, and she saw the little white lines on the tops of my thighs. I hadn't noticed them, didn't even know what stretch marks were, until she made her hand look like a paw and called me Tiger. Just another person who tried to boost her own poor self-image by making fun of someone else. Melanie no doubt thought that she would escape this town by marrying a soldier. And look at her now, coming home with her tail between her legs. She updates everyone on everything she does, so I knew that she was moving back 1 week to the day, literally. I moved on from her to my uncle, who had posted pictures of rocks that looked like people. Boredom and lack of motivation will do that to a man. I wondered how many people would respond if I posted a broken heart emoji, or a lengthy paragraph about my heartbreak and how it was eating me up from the inside out, and how I probably deserve to feel every bit of this agony for being so desperate for attention that I lost control of myself and my life. I wondered if Melanie would have the same reaction to my misfortune as I had to hers. Did she see me as Austin's bitchy sister who was always tagging along? The girl who wore a bathing suit that showed too much, things she found repulsive enough to pick at in front of everyone we knew. I wondered about Sammy, too, and if she would see my post and feel bad for her best friend, or whatever we were supposed to be. We barely talked anymore, but I still considered her my best friend, at least when anyone asked. Not that anyone did. A habit, I guess. I closed out of Facebook before I could follow through with my social experiment. I moved onto the porch. It was the perfect temperature outside, warm enough not to have to wear a jacket, but not too warm as to be hot and sticky. I took the poetry book and a beer that Kale left in my fridge and spent the next hour outside in the fresh air. I had one drink of the dark amber beer and all I could taste was Kale. He was everywhere. He had become everything. I turned the pages in my book and felt like every single poem was read in Kale's voice. I skipped from page to page. Your skin is dark, as the velvet night. Your starred eyes are tenants in the constellations. I closed the book and tossed it, watching as it went skidding across the porch. The chaos of longing is exactly what I felt, and I wanted the collection as far away from me as they could get. I kicked the little pink book and watched as it disappeared into the patch of weeds next to my porch. Then I felt guilty. It wasn't the poet's fault that my first love only lasted a week. I crawled over to grab it and dug my hand into the stringy weeds. They were too long, too unmanageable, growing into unpredictable vegetation overgrowing my yard. This little house was the only thing that wasn't going to turn out to be something it wasn't. I knew what I was getting when I signed the dotted line for the basically abandoned house at the end of a strip mall-covered street. The house was exactly what I knew it was. Sure, it was falling apart and unkempt, but that's what I had signed up for. I was working my way back to making it beautiful. My house, for me. And yet, it had become another thing that reminded me of Kale. I began to pull up the weeds in the yard. I needed a distraction, and had the rest of the day to do as I pleased, as long as Molly didn't drive past my house and see me out here yanking the weeds from the yard. Minutes went by, and I moved on from the weeds to sweep the gravel back into my driveway. It had started to take over my yard. I thought about Kale and his remodel plans for his duplex. He had a talent for home design, and I hated that he told me I should pave my driveway, and now every time I see the graystone gravel, I would think about him. Don't even think about that, I told myself, possibly out loud. But at that point, I couldn't be sure. Don't let him make you turn on this house. It's all you have. Chapter 64. At first, I thought the white Bronco pulling up to my house was a mirage. The sun was setting, so I had to have been out there for at least 2 hours. My mind was obviously playing tricks on me. I stood up and stared, watching unwavering as he pulled up. When he got out of his truck, it hit me. He was at my house, and I was letting him walk toward me.
Karina.
His voice danced around me, hypnotizing me. I opened my mouth to speak, and heard my dad's voice in my head. Followed by Kale's, then my dad's again. I didn't have enough time to figure out what I felt, or what I was going to do. You can't be here. I need time, Kale, I told him, just as he reached the grass. My back hurt as I stood there with one hand on my hip and one blocking my eyes from the burning sun.
The yard looks good.
He looked and pointed past me, ignoring what I said. Kale, you can't be here.
Karina, please,
he pleaded. I only caught a tiny glimpse of his face, the sadness in his eyes as he used them to steer me back to him. I moved my hand down like a coward so I couldn't see his face. I need time. I'm not the kind of girl who likes to be chased, Kale. I won't tell you again. I said the same thing to him as I did to Estelle when she called to try and butter me up. At that point, the only people who I could trust were Austin and Elodie, and with the way my luck was with people, they were probably going to betray me too. Kale was staring at me, I could feel it. He was registering everything I was feeling, absorbing it, the way we both do when it comes to people.
Let me fall in love with you, Karina.
His voice was so soft that I was skeptical whether I heard him correctly or not. What? He stepped closer and I walked backward, putting even more distance between us.
I'm so close, Karina. Let me fall in love with you. You know me.
He touched his chest and I shook my head profusely. How dare he throw that word around like it's nothing? Like I was going to just forgive him because he used that word. Don't you dare use that against me. I spit into the night air between us. The trees shook as my anger grew. I told myself it was Mother Nature helping me out, giving me strength for this.
I'm not care, he said, coming closer again.
I dug my nails into my closed palm until I was close to breaking skin.
Don't you call me that, I warned him.
That house in Atlanta? You were going to move without telling me? I didn't care how loud my voice was or who heard it.
I don't know you at all, I said, mimicking his signature flat tone.
I wanted him to hear it and feel the sting of it. He must have found something in my expression when my eyes finally met his that told him to back off, because he put his hands in the air and turned around and walked away. I collapsed in the grass after he pulled away and stayed there until the stars dried my tears and moon glared at me to go to my own bed and leave hers. Chapter 65. Molly was okay with me the next day. I thought that maybe she'd give me a hard time, but she knew something was up and gave me the space I needed. I concentrated on my clients, on making them whole. They didn't need to feel as broken as I did. My shift passed uneventfully. Slow, but uneventfully. The short walk home was hard. I kept thinking of the last time I had taken the same steps, how I had started out in joy and ended in despair. Life went on like that for a couple of days. I worked, I slept. I may have watched a couple of movies with Ality. I can't be sure. Really, everything was a blur. I'm not sure when it was, how many days post-breakup, that I had come home from work to find Austin waiting for me. His face was red, and his hair was a mess. His hands were rigid, white fingers shaking. There were no cars in the driveway or parked on the street, so I couldn't figure out how he got there. What's wrong? Are you okay? I asked, mildly panicked. He'd only been to visit once since he got back. He shook his head.
Me and Dad got into it.
I sat down next to him on the cold cement. Into it yelling or into it fighting?
Both. I swung on him.
Austin!
He charged at me, though. He made me lose it, Care. You know how he is. He sits there like he's high and mighty. Do this, don't do that. When I was your age...
I know, I've had my share of lectures, believe me. Austin continued his rant, as if he hadn't even heard me.
You know he doesn't care about her. He doesn't give a fuck about her. When I asked if she'd been in touch or anything, he just laughed. I swear, Care, he fucking laughed. Right in front of Estelle. You don't think he's heard from her, right? You still haven't.
I shook my head. I was used to shaking my head when it came to my mother. She, her, my mother. I knew exactly who he was talking about. No. My insides were scalding.
She's close, though. I know she is. I can feel it.
Austin. I reached for his hand. We were never a touchy family, except for our mother. When we were little, she would hug me for the smallest thing, like a happy face sticker on a book report, or cleaning my room without being asked. Even when I got older, she would run her hands down my back almost every night before bed. Sometimes she'd trace words over my pajama top with her long nails. Night-night. Love you. Care Bear. You can't worry about her, Austin. She's an adult. She made her own choices. You'll drive yourself crazy if you obsess over her. I was such a hypocrite. I couldn't stop thinking about my mother, no matter how hard I tried. I'd see her in line at the grocery store. I'd hear her voice in my head as I washed the dishes. I'd climb into bed at night and cry myself to sleep. She was everywhere, she was nowhere. And I was so goddamned pissed at her and the world. How could she take off like that? How could she leave and not get in touch with us? How could she have this relentless hold on us?
I'm tired of this place, Karina. I just want to go somewhere else. Not back to Rudy's, just somewhere else. Don't you feel the itch anymore?
Wow, the itch. That brought me back. It felt so long ago. Those days when we'd plan our escape. We plotted everything right down to the last detail. I'd wait tables and he'd change tires and pump gas, depending on where we'd land. I'd find a nice restaurant with gingham tablecloths and a sassy older waitress named Phyllis, who would call me kid and take me under her wing. Austin would work hard and stay out of trouble. He'd be early for his shift most days. The proprietor of the gas station would notice what a good employee he was, and after a while would show him how to fix cars. Austin would be good at that, fixing cars. If only he'd put his mind to solving problems instead of creating them. We came up with so many adventures back then, hanging out on the futon in Austin's room an hour past bedtime. We knew they wouldn't notice. They never came in to check on us anymore. We were just kids, and already we thought of our parents as they, as them and us. I told Austin that they didn't come in to check on us because we were older, almost 12, then 13 and 14. He was 15 when he stopped asking why. We'd talk for hours, dreaming of our future travels, the small town where we'd make our home. We'd learn to fit in, be whoever we wanted to be. He'd be that mechanic, I'd be that waitress. Or maybe he'd be a musician and I'd be a painter, or a glassblower. I wanted Austin to believe more than I wanted it myself. I spun the words tightly around him, pulling him in closer until I could tell he had accepted the possibility of a better future. And when I could feel him attached to the dream we were drawing for ourselves, I'd relax my own breathing and sometimes even I could believe in that glorious future. I spoke in a loud whisper those nights, cupping my hands over Austin's ears to distract him from the waves of misery coming from our parents' bedroom down the hall. "Where is there to go?" I asked him.
"Arizona, Barcelona, anywhere. Hell, I'd go live with our grand—"
"Do you even know where your passport is?" I asked.
"Yes, and yours. They're both at Dad's in the drawer."
Before our orders to Georgia, my dad told us we were going to be sent to Germany. My mom was as close to happy as I'd seen her in a very long time. She had always wanted to visit Munich. Apparently, one of her friends had moved there after high school. We rushed to get our passports. Mom spent her time mapping out trains across Europe and learning basic words in German. It was Guten Morgen when she woke us up each morning, and Guten Tag when we returned from school in the afternoon. "Care," she said to me one day, "listen to this. Schönes Wetter heute, nicht wahr?" She was beaming from ear to ear. I just said, "It's lovely weather today, isn't it?" "Mom," I kidded her, "it's raining." "Oh, don't be so literal," she said, laughing. "How about this one? Das sind meine Kinder, Karina und Austin. Ja, sie sind sehr gut erzogen. Vielen Dank." Austin ran into the room when he heard his name. Mom beamed at him. I just said, "These are my children, Karina and Austin. Yes, they are very well-behaved, thank you." "You just said that Austin is well-behaved? Mom, you're hilarious. You can't deceive those poor Germans like that. I give Austin 3 days before he's breaking some international law or something." "Ha ha ha, Karina," Austin said. We laughed, and my mom made homemade spaghetti that night. It was easy to remember that happy time. There were so few of them. Chapter 66. Mom was back. She was lively without being manic, clear and in charge without being hyper-focused, understanding and forgiving. She was like those TV moms who always seemed to know the right thing to say. She spent her time cleaning and sorting, boxing up all our stuff. Her collectible dishes and vintage jewelry, our toys and clothes. The TV hadn't had a break like that since before she started to fade. "That'll be worth something someday," Mom said, going through her old magazines. "Once the printed word is completely extinct." She liked to warn us about the future almost as much as she liked us to know how well prepared she was for it. I was sitting at the kitchen table that afternoon. Mom was standing behind me, pulling my hair through a sadistic highlighting cap. I suffered through it gladly, though, just to have hair like the girls named Ashley and Tiffany. Our house was packed up well before the movers were scheduled to pack everything for us. Mom kept her vinyls out, though, and even started singing along again when Alanis Morissette was at her feistiest. "It only takes 2 hours from Paris to London. Can you believe that?" she asked. She was dancing around me, wearing those weird plastic gloves. When "You Oughta Know" came on, she punched her hands through the air like it was her fight song. I remember how she looked that day. She was wearing eyeliner and had decorated her long brown hair with little braids randomly scattered. She was beautiful, happy. "Karina, we are going to have so much fun. Imagine the people we will meet. Everyone is different there, mixed around, and no one cares like they do here. People won't judge us. It's going to be incredible care," she promised. Why is it that happiness is always so short-lived when despair seems to stick around like an unwanted guest? It was the next day, while Austin and I were at school, that my dad broke the news. We were no longer going to Europe. A change of command meant that we would be stationed in Georgia, just two states away. My dad said it was better for his chances of promotion. My mom said it was worse for what was left of her soul. The next morning, I found an empty bottle of gin in the bathroom. I bagged it up and carried it outside to the big trash can, helping her hide the evidence. Enabling, I think they call it. At that point with my mom, it wasn't the empty bottle that worried me. It was the fact that since it was gin, it meant she must have run out of vodka. Chapter 67. Do you want to stay here for a little bit? I looked at Austin, and for a second I could see her in him. Something around the eyes, about the shape of his mouth. We'd always be a mashup of our parents, and that horrified me.
No, he sighed. I don't know. I need to figure my shit out. I can't do that from your couch.
It's cheaper than Barcelona, I joked.
I was thinking about staying with Martin.
His words punched me. A sucker punch. Martin? I was going to make him say his name.
Kale.
Since when are you two friends like that? I couldn't even hide the hurt in my voice.
I don't know, a week or so?
He laughed. I couldn't breathe.
He's been at Mendoza's a lot.
Seriously? I couldn't believe him.
Look, I know something happened between you two, and I know it ended. And that's all I know. You told me it was nothing serious, that the shit with Dad was a mix-up, right?
He looked me straight in the eyes, daring me to be honest. That was a dare I wouldn't take.
So unless there is more to it, more that you want to share with me, I don't see the problem with me crashing with him. He's the only one beside Mendoza who just chills at home and doesn't bring chicks home every night. He doesn't get in trouble.
I wanted to throw up. I was relieved and devastated. It was a wretched combination. I'm not saying not to be friends with him. I let out a breath of frustration. I couldn't think of a valid reason to tell Austin not to stay with Kale, unless I wanted to tell him everything, and that just wasn't possible. He would hate all of them, maybe even Mendoza, too. It was enough that I hated them.
If you don't want me to, just say it. Just know that I can't stay at Dad's anymore, Care. I can't do it.
I nodded. I understood needing to get away from our dad's. He should stay at Kale's house, or Martin's house. I like to think of him as Martin, as the soldier who was just doing what he was told, who had offered to help my brother when he needed it. Not the man who I fell for, the man I fell too deeply and foolishly for. I hadn't seen him for a while, except when I scrolled through my Instagram, looking at the row of pictures of us. He had changed me so much in such a short amount of time. The captions seemed so clever then. Atlanta refuses to see us now, I wrote under a picture of us in the car, a copy of 50 Shades of Grey on the dashboard. Preparing for the upcoming movie, I was doing a reread, and it was even more exciting when I had a man who liked to get bossy in my bed when I closed the book. My tire blew right as we were leaving for our trip to Atlanta, the trip that never happened. I had to shake it off, to actually shake my head to stop the thought of Kale invading my mind. My hands were trembling. I thought I was over this.
Dad's calling me again, Austin said, changing the subject.
Are you going to answer?
No.
A car drove by. A little boy in the back seat waved at us. Austin waved back, even smiling for the child.
I got a job, too,
Austin told me a minute or so later. The sun was going down and the sky was changing colors around us. Really? I pepped up for him. That's great news, I told him. I meant it. He hadn't had a job since he got fired from the drive-in. Where is it? He hesitated.
It's with Martin.
Of course it is. I hung my head between my knees.
He's flipping that duplex, you know, the one he lives in. He's paying me, Lawson, everyone to help him. I'm going to get more hours in than everyone else since they all have to work during the week. It's just like tearing up carpet, shit like that.
I needed to be happy for my brother, even if he was wrapping his life around the one person I was trying to detangle mine from.
You two are a lot alike, you know that?
He said, a smile on his face. It was the first time he looked even close to happy since I walked up. I shook my head. That's so not true.
Whatever you say, Karina.
How's Katie? I asked, flipping the attention back to him. I knew they were back together. I saw it on his Facebook. I guess her ex-boyfriend was out of the picture for now.
Good. She's good for me. She keeps me in line. And she wakes up early for school, so I go out less, you know?
He sounded so proud of himself, and I let him be. We were two totally different humans, even if we shared a womb.
That's good, I'm happy for you, I said to him.
I laid back on the porch, resting my head close to his. We were almost kids again.
Thanks. I won't bring him around if you don't want me to, but he's really helping me out.
I stared at the sky, begging for the stars to come out and play. I wanted to know that I could count on them. I wanted to be certain of something.
It's fine, I'm seeing someone anyway.
The words slid from my tongue, devious as the lie itself.
You are?
He asked. Yeah, I don't want to talk about it, I told Austin, knowing he would shy away from anything complicated when given the chance.
Okay,
he agreed.
So you can't be mad that he's picking me up here like any minute.
He said the words fast, as if it would change their meaning.
Austin, I whined his name, twisting it around my tongue. Fine, I'm going inside. You really need to get a car.
I will, now that I have a job.
He beamed, easing my pain a little.
I'm proud of you, really.
And see, you didn't have to join the army after all, I joked.
I knew he wouldn't have gone through with it, no matter how much our dad tried to force it on him.
I heard the roar of Kale's truck before I saw it. My body reacted at the same lightning speed as my mind, and I had to actively force myself to go inside the house before he turned on my street. Go, I told my feet. Now, I told them. But he was out of the truck and walking up the grass before I had moved even an inch. His eyes were hooded. He wore a baseball cap. I saw the confusion flashing across his face when I didn't run. I wish he knew I couldn't help it. I wanted to move. I desperately wanted to move and run inside and hide under my covers and pretend it never happened.
Karina.
Kale's voice was punishment wrapped in silk. I couldn't speak through the lump in my throat. My tongue felt so heavy. He looked the same, and it surprised me. How had it only been a week since I had touched him? It didn't seem possible. My body was a traitor, reminiscing over his warmth as he stood in the yard, too far away from me. My brother stood up, covering my view of Kale for a second. Just what I needed to help me snap out of it. See you later, I said to Austin, as casually as I could manage without looking at Kale. I deserved an Academy Award. I grabbed the screen door handle and didn't look back again. Once inside, once I heard the click of the lock, I pressed my body against the front door. It was an attempt to stabilize myself, to keep myself upright. It didn't work. I cried so hard that I slid down onto the floor. That's where I stayed until Elodie came home from work and lured me up with pictures of her sonogram. Her little avocado was now the length of a banana. She was so happy that I cried again. Chapter 68. I was fine closing for Elodie since she was having back pain, and I was fine when Molly left early to let her dogs out because her husband's poker game bled over and he wouldn't be home in time. But being in the spa alone, I hated it. My imagination was the problem, the way it loved to travel to extremes, and quickly. I was starting to get creeped out, like I used to when I was left alone in my parents' house, and still do sometimes in my own place. I was thinking of all those urban legends that everyone thought were so funny. The call is coming from inside the house. I never got the joke myself. And the one about the man hiding under a girl's bed, licking her fingers so that she'd think it was her dog. Yeah, I was freaking myself out. I didn't have long to go. There were no clients on the schedule sheet, and I doubted anyone would be walking down the strip mall within the next 20 minutes. So I closed down my room for the night and got stuff ready for the morning. The cleaning company had been in the night before, and everything was in pretty good shape. I just had to straighten up a few things and make sure all the candles were out. That kind of thing. I turned the lights off one by one before locking the back door, padlock too, and shutting off the office light. I practically ran to the lobby where the lights were still on and switched off the overhead lighting. I turned on the flashlight on my phone and walked to the front corner window to turn on the floor lamp. We always kept one dim light on to prevent break-ins. Molly told me that schools did this too, and for the same reason. Just the mention of a break-in plucked at my nerves. Freaking yourself out much, Karina? I was laughing a little at myself then, telling myself what a wimp I was. It was like all those CSI scenarios I made up for people. And Law and Order? Too many Law and Order SVU marathons had obviously done a number on my head. And then I saw a shadow approach the door and practically jumped out of my skin. I think I may have screamed a little too. I stood still, trying to catch my breath and slow my heart rate. The shadow moved closer into view, and that's when I saw that it was a man. A young one, but not a boy. Maybe a soldier, given the haircut. It was a little late for someone to just pass by. Plus, I didn't recognize him, and that made me a little uneasy. I had never been alone in the spa at night before, and I would surely never do it again. And I wished to God I had listened to Kale when he told me to start carrying mace again. I looked at the now empty pink stick dangling from my purse. Wasn't it funny how it was pink? Like it just had to be cute and girly so I could protect myself from men at night. The man tugged at the door and I stepped into view, flicking the other lamp back on. I turned the flashlight off on my phone and kept a little distance from the door.
Hey, sorry, are you closed?
He was calm. His voice was friendly enough. Yeah, well, in 10 minutes. I sounded like a terrified church mouse. I felt like one too, and I hated that. Courage, Karina.
Oh, sorry. I think I did something to my back during PT and was hoping you guys would still be open.
He sounded genuine enough, but I couldn't see his face. We could see you in the morning? I could come in early, I offered, assuming he would have to work, but feeling sort of guilty knowing he was a soldier and in pain.
I think I can get out of PT in the morning. Can I come in and put my name down?
He asked. I looked up at the little red light of the camera hanging on the wall and unlocked the door. My mind flashed back to Law and Order and how Molly would react when she discovered my body in the morning. The man stepped inside and looked into my eyes. It was a little off-putting, but honest, too, in a strange sort of way. He followed me to the desk, and I grabbed the paper version of the schedule, since I had already shut the computer down. I looked at my day tomorrow. I have a 10 o'clock opening and a 12, but I could come in at 9 or 8:30 for you since you came all this way tonight, I told him. I didn't know where he came from, but I was trying to recite some of the typical customer service lines I've used from job to job. Inconveniencing yourself for the unhappy customer or client usually does the trick, unless the customer is a real jerk. Then they're on their own.
Let's do 9:30 so it will be extra quiet in here.
He looked behind him to the hours of operation painted on the front door in clear white letters. Okay? I swallowed. 9:30 it is. Can I have your name, please?
Nielsen, he told me.
I wrote it down. It sounded familiar, but I knew I had never seen his face before. I knew faces.
Are you the one who, you know, gives the special kind of massage?
His voice crawled over me like tiny little spiders. My stomach dropped. What did you just say? I asked. Accused was more like it. I looked at the camera again, this time in a real obvious way. This time he noticed.
Well, I heard there's one of you here who does,
he slithered.
You know, special massages?
I wanted to throw up. I wanted to run. But I reached deep for my courage and held my ground. I'm going to ask you to leave, I said as firmly as possible. Then I reached for the landline and lifted it halfway to my ear. He held up his hands in mock surrender, smirking. I thought I saw a flash of metal in the back of his jaw when he laughed.
Sure, okay, I'm teasing, sorry.
He held his hands up.
No harm done, no need to get defensive.
I stared at him, silently, not lowering the phone and hoping he couldn't see my hand shaking or the way my knuckles were stretched and white, holding onto the phone as tightly as I could. After the longest few seconds of my life, he retreated, walking backward toward the front door. He kept his eyes on me, though. Those icy blue eyes and taut pale skin were much more sinister now that he was scaring the shit out of me. I couldn't let him see that he was, though, so I held my lips in a tight line and kept the phone up so that he could see. Just before he backed out of the door, the stranger smiled again.
You're Fisher's daughter, right?
An alarm sounded in my head. Who was this guy? The bell dinged when he pressed his back against the door. My heart was pounding out of my chest. Please leave, I silently begged him. Please go. He turned around and hovered in the doorway. And in that moment, just as the door was slowly pulling closed, Kale appeared on the sidewalk. I thought I was going to pass out at the sight of him there. Kale, in the flesh. I wasn't alone anymore. Chapter 69. Kale opened the door and I climbed into his truck. I tried not to think about how much was left unresolved between us, or how much I wanted to move next to him and hold on to his warm body. Old school Kings of Leon was playing low through the speakers.
Seatbelt,
Kale reminded me as usual. You're in no position to be bossy, I told him. He smiled. I'm starting the clock now, I said. 20 minutes. And I did, too. I set my iPhone timer. He smiled again. I hated that my guard was slipping and slipping fast, but the burst of relief I felt when he looked at me, head tilted and lips parted. Well, I didn't hate that. What? I asked him, tucking my chin into my shoulder to hide my mouth.
It feels good to breathe again,
he responded, eyes locked onto mine. That was it. Addiction. Relapse. I couldn't help it if I wanted to. Mm-hmm, I teased him. Ask me stuff, I said to break the intensity. It was either that or give in to my body and touch his shoulders, his neck, his lips. All of the pain from last week felt worth it just to be sitting here beside him. As I said, addiction. He turned the radio down.
Are you sure you're okay? He looked spooked. You know, by that guy who was walking out of your work.
He sounded concerned. I wanted him to be concerned, even if I wouldn't ever admit it to him. I nodded. Yeah, I'm fine, really. It would hit me later on, I knew that, when I was alone, without the safety of Kale's body next to me, without the protection of his presence offered. It would hit me what happened, that some creepy guy came in and made a disgusting joke and knew my dad by name. I rolled down the passenger window to get some fresh air. It smelled a little like fresh rain and earthworms. It helped calm me. The wind blowing, Kale driving, the loud thrum of the engine in his beast of a truck he drives. It all helped calm me.
Okay, as long as you're sure.
He waited for my response. I nodded.
How old were you when you lost your first tooth?
He asked. I thought about it for a second. 6, I think. My mom said I used to eat them. Like, literally, I would swallow them before she caught me, so the tooth fairy missed me twice. He bit his lip, trying not to laugh. His next question was,
okay, how many tickets have you gotten in your life?
I tilted my head. Traffic or concert, I clarified.
Traffic.
3.
3? You've only been driving, what, 4 years tops?
He teased me.
Well, if you're going for 1 a year, you're a little behind. You know that, don't you?
I nodded. He continued.
How many pets have you had over the span of your life?
Only one. His name was Moby. I explained how I loved that furry little fella, until he ran away for the 40th time and never came back.
Like the whale or the singer?
Kale asked. I bit down my laugh, but missed a little of it. Neither, we just liked the name. He was wearing a gray t-shirt with a navy bomber jacket over it. The jacket was tight on his arms and his jeans were black, with rips in the knees. My favorite jeans. Ever created, really.
What does the taste of macaroni and cheese remind you of?
He asked me as he turned onto the highway. Where do you come up with these questions? I was laughing now. He shrugged.
Why? Did I stump you?
I shook my head. Mac and cheese reminds me of my mom. I leaned forward, covering my face. That's always my answer. I uncovered my face and pushed my wild hair back away from my cheeks. But she made the best macaroni and cheese ever, from scratch. Except the noodles, of course. She doesn't make the noodles, I told him. She always told me that when I get married, she'd teach me the recipe, which is weird. I half laughed.
And outdated,
he added. Totally outdated, I agreed.
I have a few more questions,
he said. The turn signal clicked as we waited at the red light in front of Kroger. It was across the street from a car wash, the one where Brian and I broke up while he was vacuuming his car. He was obsessed with vacuuming his car. Go on. I encouraged him to keep going so I could wash Brian from my brain.
When did you realize that you were different from everyone else around you?
He asked. Our eyes met just then. It was so dark in the car. He had one hand on his steering wheel and one hand on his lap. I wanted so desperately to touch his fingers. All of the willpower I summoned up over the last week had evaporated so quickly. I moved a little closer to Kale and moved his leather book bag out from between us. A small stack of papers fell out from the unzipped top. I sat them on the empty space next to me.
What kind of car do you imagine you'll drive in 5 years?
Hmm, Probably the same one. I don't know, I don't care about cars, I told him.
What's your biggest fear?
Kale asked me. I answered that one without even thinking about it. Something happening to Austin. Kale looked over at me and without a word, told me that he felt my worry for my brother. Kale was the first person to ever just get me so effortlessly. It was so refreshing to be around him again. So much so that it overpowered the doubt that had been clouding my mind since I had seen him last. My turn. I was quiet for the last couple of questions. I didn't have an answer for the first question he asked, because I had never seen a Marvel movie.
Do you feel like you know me now?
He asked. I shook my head. I said my turn. I was nearly next to him in the front cab now, and he looked down between us.
Put your seatbelt on. Then it's your turn.
No sooner were the words out of his mouth than a flash of light illuminated the windshield. He had swerved into another lane. A horn blared as Kale jerked the wheel to straighten the car and I caught my breath. I moved back to my seat at the other side of the cab and buckled in. Kale was looking straight ahead, his hands strangling the steering wheel. Are you okay? I asked him. A couple seconds passed and he swallowed.
Are you?
He asked me without looking at me. Yeah. You were so worried about my seatbelt that you almost killed us. I reached for his hand and realized just how hard he was gripping the wheel. Kale. I said his name softly, like I did when he woke up in the morning, confused as to what continent he was on. I saw the same look on his face now. Kale, it's okay. I'm okay. We're okay. Do you want to pull over? He was silent. I reached across the pile of papers and the book bag and put my hand on his leg. I gently stroked his skin over his jeans. Pull over. It wasn't a question. I could see that he still hadn't snapped out of it. Kale. I lifted my hand into the air. I'm going to touch your face, I warned him, not knowing how he would react. My body was going to give up on me if I kept going through rush after rush of fear like this. He nodded slowly and I gently placed my open palm on the side of his cheek, pressing softly into his warm skin. I kept it still and slowly rubbed my thumb across the light stubble on his jawline. He pulled to the side of the road before I had to say his name again. His breath came in heavy puffs, thick blasts of panic. I was so happy to be there with him, so close and forgetting the pep talks I had given myself every morning and night while trying to keep my distance. I should have known that it would be impossible to stay away from him. It's okay, I said again, hugging his waist.
Karina.
His breath came hard and fast, like he had run up a flight of stairs. I leaned over and knelt on the cushion, my body turned toward him. We're okay, look. I nudged his nose with mine, and his eyes regained their focus. He looked like a little boy, not a war veteran, not a man. It melted my heart. It made me want to tell him that I was falling for him, that all he needed to do was explain what had happened without any lies or bending of the truth. We had so much to talk about. Right now, I just wanted to comfort him. He was coming down from it, wherever it was. He was coming back to me. I moved my body closer to his. I'm just going to move these papers, I said as I stacked them neatly. There was an army folder on top with the typical army star. Kale stilled next to me. I felt the shift in the space around us as I realized what the packet said. Cars passed us on the freeway, but I didn't care. I wanted him to be calm, to be able to breathe. Whose enlistment packet is this? I asked, curious as always. Thought you were trying to get out. I couldn't stop myself. I opened the folder. That's when Kale reached over, trying to grab it from me. I can't believe you're going to re-enlist after all you... And then I read the name on the first page. Austin Tyler Fisher. Chapter 70. Now it was Kale's turn to call my name. Kale's turn to bring me back to Earth.
Karina, Karina, he said. Listen to me, Karina. There's an explan-
His words were gibberish. I could make out my name, but that was it. I could barely feel my body.
What is this, Kale?
I managed at last. The truck was parked on the soft shoulder, but felt like it was dangling over the edge of a steep cliff. When he didn't answer me, I screamed. I didn't have time to waste on his cons and excuses. I was reading the evidence.
Why is this in your car?
I slammed the folder down onto the empty space on the seat between us. A semi honked at us and Kale shifted into drive. Do not move this fucking car until you tell me what this is and why it's in your car. I was every emotion. Fear, anger, disgust, contempt. He was a marble statue, beautiful but cold. The alarm on my phone went off. His 20 minutes was up. Had it only been 20 minutes? Had Austin really joined the army? And Kale knew? More to the point, what was his part in it? Answer me or never speak to me again, I told him, as I dug in my purse for my phone. I had missed a call from a local number that I didn't recognize, but nothing else. I searched Austin's name and my head was spinning so fast that everything was blurry when I tried to type a text to him. I called him. He didn't pick up. You made him, didn't you? I spat at Kale. You did this to hurt me, I screamed at him.
I did this because he needs structure. I did this because he needs to stop fucking up his life.
Oh my God, you're unbelievable. This is how far you're willing to take this thing against my dad? Shipping his only son off to the war? I was going to be sick. I tried to roll the window down but couldn't find it. I reached for the door handle and Kale tried to reach for me. I jerked away. Don't you dare. Don't you fucking dare touch me. I nearly fell out of the Bronco. Get away from me. Get the fuck away. Tears soaked my face and my hair stuck to my wet cheeks. Go! I screamed, not caring that it was dark out or that I would be alone on the side of the road. I just wanted to be as far away from him as humanly possible. And of course, because the universe hated me, the moment my shoes touched the ground and I yelled at him again to drive away, the sky started to cry, covering me with thick tears of rain from head to toe. This concludes the reading of The Brightest Stars by Anna Todd. Copyright 2018 by Anna Todd. This book was read by Brooke Bloomingdale. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Bookshelf Literary Agency and was produced in 2018 by Blackstone Publishing, which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Publishing. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.